If you could say your name and the unit that you served with.
My name is William Franklin Vermilion, and the unit I served with was the 9th Air Force and the 455th Squadron.
So you were based in England then during World War II?
And we were in England during the service, and I flew out of England.
Okay. Where are you from originally?
Elk Point, South Dakota.
Did you join the Army, or
no,
were you drafted?
I was drafted. One of the first drafted out of Union County.
Were you assigned to the Army Air Corps, or did you...
I was in the Army Air Corps simply by appointment. They needed people in the Army Air Corps at that time. No way would I have been in the Army Air Corps, because I don't think those big things are supposed to be flying up in the sky anyway. No, I'd never joined the Army Air Corps, but I was there for over 3 years. So
where did you do training?
Training was, well, I took, I was a radio operator on the plane, on a B-26 Marauder. I took my training right here in Sioux Falls at the Army Air Base, at the radio base. That was rather a quaint deal. I was in Florida at the time. They said, this group is all going to a radio school. Well, there was a radio school just outside of St. Louis, so we all thought that's where we were going. Most of the people I was with were from New York and New Jersey, and so we started out, several train cars of us, and right through St. Louis. I think everybody said, oh my God, we're going to South Dakota. And I was the only happy one in the whole place, because I was going right back home, you know. But that didn't last very long. It was over in a few months.
Did you have an opportunity to see your folks when you were in training?
Oh, yeah. Every weekend I'd go. Somebody would come and get me from Elk Point. I'd go down there. I'd take friends with me down there. Yeah, that was a good part of it. Yeah.
Did you have siblings that were in the military as well, or?
I had not at that time. I was the first one. Before the end of the war, I had three brothers in the service, and they were all overseas, and I was a prisoner at one time there, and that was pretty hard on my folks. It was real hard, but that's the way it was. And there were other families the same way.
Did they all serve in the European theater as well?
Two brothers were in Germany, and one was in India. I don't know what the heck he was doing there, but he was in India, and they all got home safely.
Describe the trip from when you were done with training to Europe, to England.
Okay, we got all our basic flying training down in Shreveport, Louisiana. And that was a nice permanent base, beautiful, big three-story stone structures, and it was a nice place. And our flying was out over the ocean. A lot of it was over the ocean, with targets out over the ocean. We were put with a regular crew, but we had to pick up our plane someplace else. So we flew to, I believe it was Maine. Bangor, Maine, I believe, is where we picked up our plane, and then flew from there to Iceland. We landed at these places, Iceland, Greenland, and then Ireland, before we got to our base in England. And that was interesting, because it took us quite a while to go. Iceland and Greenland, it was June. The month was June, and Iceland and Greenland are reversed from... So it was light all night there. We could sit outside and read the paper all night, you know. And it was a little unusual. Then we finally landed in Ireland and eventually at our base in north of London.
So when you flew from the United States, you were in the plane that you were going to fly?
Right. It
with
was
the crew?
Our plane and our crew, yeah.
Had right. Had you trained together stateside as a crew, or were you assigned just before
we were a crew here before we left Barksdale Field, but we didn't have our own plane then. But we were a crew, and we were flew as a crew out of England for, I don't know, can't remember, I think about 25 missions as a crew. I was on my 30th mission, however, because I had flown with some other crew as a gunner. radio gunner.
You flew the B-26 Marauder?
Right.
Can you describe that plane and the number of crew and
well,
your duties?
Like I say, I was a radio, what they call a radio gunner. There were six on the plane. We could fly with five, but we preferred the six. And a pilot, a co-pilot, navigator, those were the three officers. Then the non-commissioned officers were tail gunner, my job, radio gunner. Then most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, we'd have a fifth or a sixth member who was the engineer. And he also flew a position, the turret. He was a turret gunner. Like I say, that's the way it was most of the time. Now, the radio, the reason they call the radio gunner, radio didn't have to be in its place all the time. If we were the lead plane in the formation, then I would have to be at the radio. If our plane was not the lead plane, then I flew as a gunner, and the side gunners. So most of the time, I was at the gunnery position. Of course, the navigator and pilot and co-pilot were up toward the front of the plane, and we were spaced, the other three spaced to the rear. So when we got hit and lost an engine and had to, our pilot thought, but he thought he could get us back to England. Then he decided he couldn't do that, but he might get us to the ocean and we could ditch. Well, none of us wanted to do that. And so finally, and we were down to about 1,500 feet then, finally he said we'll have to abandon plane. So he ordered us all to jump. And as soon as we got away from the plane to pull our cord, because we were pretty low. We were down between 1,500 and 1,000 feet at that time. Well, then we were down so low when we finally all got out that he had to land the plane. He had no choice. He didn't have enough room to bail out. So he did crash land the plane. He didn't get hurt. Did a little damage to the plane. But so that was our entrance to Germany. We were over France at that time because we didn't get that far into the country with our short-range bomber.
So the mission that you were on where you lost your plane,
yeah,
was a bombing mission over and France? Or
it was in France. It was before D-Day, see? And so it was all occupied, German-occupied. And so we might have hit the border of Germany sometime or another, but most of our bombing was done over France.
What was the date?
February 4th, 1944. It was a fateful day. Strangely enough, 1986, my wife and I owned a ladies' ready-to-wear store in Beresford. And February 5th, 1986, we burned out completely. Same day as when I was shot down, 42 years later. So I don't care for February 5th too much.
Did all of the people out of the plane survive?
No. The three of non-commissioned officers, we exited the rear opening. And of course, the officers, they could get out a closer one to the front of the tail gunner went first, engineer went, then I went. And as I was going down, and it wasn't a very far drop at that time, I saw somebody come out of the front part of the plane and go to the ground, and their chute didn't open. And of course, I didn't know who it was. But when I got down and unfastened and out of my parachute, and I went over to, because it wasn't very far from me, and with my co-pilot, come to find out, after I saw the pilot and talked to him, he had told the co-pilot, "You can stay with me if you want to, or you can jump." And he took the jump, and it was a wrong choice. But that's what happened to him. And then we were all caught within a short time, and pilot and the navigator and the tail gunner and myself were captured. The engineer never did get captured. He got with a French family, and they just kept him till the invasion, till D-Day, and he went and got back with the American lines. And so he was never a prisoner. I visited with him after I got home. He came down from New Jersey to Ohio and saw me at that time. And so we had a visit.
When you all got on the ground, did you congregate together and then try to travel together, or did
No.
you split up?
We were captured separately. I was captured and taken to some place, and there was the tail gunner. And then we did see the pilot and the navigator, too. And I was the one that had to tell them about our co-pilot being killed. Because when I went over to him, I could, of course, naturally see who it was. And I took things off him that thought maybe I could use, you know, if I happened to have some freedom. But that didn't work out either.
Describe the moment when you were captured.
After I landed, and I was on over to see Lieutenant Jackson and took a few things off him, some rations and things. And then a couple Frenchmen came along. Well, I don't speak French, but they did get across to me that if I took off across his plowed field to the wooded area, which wasn't a very long way, then they would come and pick me up that night. Well, I started across the field, but I soon quit when I heard that I was sure it was German hollering, coming at me. I stopped, naturally. And it was, that's when the Germans got there, and I knew I was hooked then. You asked to explain the feeling. You know, I can't tell you. In fact, I remember them taking me in and asking questions, and of course we weren't supposed to tell anything, and we didn't have to, because as it turned out, they had our airplane, so we were asked questions. And I don't think I started realizing exactly what had happened until probably that night or something. And but we were kept in behind bars for a few days, and then it was only a couple days after that that they took us to a regular camp. Then they separated the officers from the non-commission. Then I didn't see my pilot and the navigator. Well, I've never seen the navigator again. I got home after being in camp 15 months. I got home. I tried to find Mr. Tail Gunner, but I never heard from him again. I didn't try to any of the reunions of my squadron or anything like that until the summer of 2004. I looked at one of my POW, I think it was the July issue, 2004, of my POW magazine, and I told this someplace else today, and here's a name popped out at me, Bob Mims. He'd written it was in the letter to the editor column. He had written in there about something, I don't remember what it was now. That was my pilot's name was Robert P. Mims from Jackson, Mississippi. Well, this was Bob Mims from Natchez, Mississippi. And so I wrote a letter to him asking if he happened to be the same one. And he called me that, yeah, I'm your pilot. So we had a little correspondence. That was, it had to be in September, because we were planning a trip to Branson, Missouri. We go down there once in a while. And I wrote a letter to him and said, we were planning this trip to Branson, and I looked at the map, and he had about the same distance as I had. I said, why don't you come up, meet us up there? And he was a widower. His wife had died. And I told him where we always stayed and what nights we'd be there. I didn't hear for a little while, but about two nights before we were to leave, I thought, well, he's not going to do it. But he called and said he and his daughter were going there. In fact, they already had made the reservation at the same hotel, same nights. So we met there over Veterans Day, 2004, and they make a big deal of Veterans Day in Branson, Missouri. Everybody is honored there. So that's what happened. In fact, we got there one night ahead of schedule, and but the next day we got together, and we went to some shows, of course, but main thing was just getting around and visiting. And he told me a lot of things that I didn't know, but he was in command in the plane, you know, and he knew what was going on, and we got out of there. So he told us things that I didn't realize at the time, and we kept communicating, and not as much as we did at first, but you know, I'm 87 years old now, and he's just about the same. Yeah, but he goes to our 455th Squadron meetings. In fact, he's real active in it, and I never have, and I haven't even since I met him, because I just don't like to travel.
Talk about your prisoner of war experience when you, after you were captured, and they did the initial, did they take you on a truck, or how did you get to where it was that you ended up?
Well, yeah, we went by train the first time. They'd take us by truck on short distances, but our first camp that they sent us to, now realize we're down in France, they sent us way up east end of the Baltic Sea. It was near Russia. That was in February yet. We were up there until July, and then they didn't like the fact that the Russians were getting that close to us, and they didn't want to be taken captive by the Russians. That was something they didn't want. So they gathered us up one night, got us out at night, and went to the Baltic Sea, put us, and I can't tell you how many there were, but it was our whole camp, I think, put as many as they could on this coal barge that was sitting there. I had to climb down this ladder down in coal barge, and it was so packed, if someone wanted to lie down, someone else had to stand up. And we were on there for 36 hours. It was not a pleasant ride by any means. You can imagine the baths, facilities and stuff like that. It wasn't nice. They took us through the north part of Germany and took us off of that barge and put us on a train and took us down into Germany to another camp, camp number three, Stalagluft number three. That's where I can truthfully say that's about the only time we came close to being mistreated. You know, that's the first thing people ask, were you mistreated, you know? Well, actually, I wasn't. I was never touched or anything, you know. They put us from the boat to the train. We went inland, and I can't tell you how far we did, but on train. But when they took us off the train, we still had 4 or 5 miles to our camp, and that is when they ran us, you know, and we were in no condition to be run, along with the guards and dogs and beside us, and everybody just threw everything they owned away, you know, just so we could keep going. Well, as it turned out, the ones that couldn't make it, that just fell by the wayside, they just came along later and picked them up and brought them in, you know, so we could just well all of them then. They probably wouldn't have put up with that. We did get to our camp, reorganized and got our things back, and we were there then until February of 45, and then the Russians were getting too close again, so they packed us up and took us, and this time we didn't have anything to go on. We walked, and we were walking for till we were liberated, marched into American hands in April 26th, and then it was a while before when we got into American hands, we were greeted royally, and you'll be flown home in a few days or something like that. We were there 6 weeks, and then came home by boat. But we got home.
Did your parents know that you had been captured, and were you able to communicate with them at any point, or they with you?
Letter by letter. They heard quite soon. Of course, I heard first I was missing in action. That was the first. Then they heard from our squadron that they were sure I was a prisoner of war, because someone had seen the plane go down and had seen people come out of the plane. So it was pretty sure I was a prisoner of war, but it was actually, then I think they heard for sure there was, but actually this was February, and it was August before they ever got a letter from me. They had my address, but they had just never gotten a letter from me, because I got packages from them when I was still in that first camp. They were great about sending packages. When I'd been in England, they sent all the time. When they sent packages, I suppose they had some source, somebody told them what to send, things to send, because they sent me cigarettes, and they knew I didn't smoke. But of course, I was a form of barter, trading that for food or something. And so they sent me, every time they sent a package, they put cigarettes in there.
So you were outside of camp. You didn't have another camp after you left that last,
that's right.
And just marched and went to different places, and you were guarded by.
Oh, yeah. When we started walking, we had an old colonel, I suppose he was a colonel, I'm sure he was, Polish, and of course they were soldiers, those Poles. He would walk alongside us, but sometimes he had a horse too. And of course, I don't know what he ate. He probably didn't eat the same thing we didn't either, but it's a funny thing. My pilot, after we met and we compared notes, and those officers, they gave their guards a bad time. Now, we didn't do that. Maybe we did a few little things, but they were digging tunnels and this and that all the time, just giving those guards a bad time. In fact, my pilot escaped once and got caught. I was surprised because we didn't. Well, maybe I just wasn't in on it. I don't know. Maybe they didn't think they could trust me.
Talk about when you came home then. You took a ship from Europe and...
France. I never got back to England. I was kind of sorry about that, but we didn't. From France to New York, I had a Navy boat. Oh, and we weren't used to boating, of course. And it was rough. It was a lot of guys got sick. I didn't ever get sick. But yeah, we got to New York, and my folks were living in Ohio at that time. They sent me to Miami Beach again. I don't know why I went down there. But eventually, this was in April, and this was in June before I got home. I spent time with my folks in Ohio, but I planned to live here in South Dakota. I thought I was going to, that's before the Japanese War was over. I thought I was going to probably have to go back in the service. I didn't know. Then in August, when the Japanese was over, then I knew I wouldn't have to, so I was discharged right away. I got my discharge in Indianapolis because it was close to where my folks lived. Then I came to South Dakota, and I wasn't married at that time, and I had to find a job. Before I went in, I was working for a wholesale grocery, chain store grocery. I went to the city and saw the headquarters down there and asked if they had a job for me. They sent me to Beersford to run the store, grocery store, and I've been there ever since.
Anything that you haven't had a chance to talk about that you wanted to mention?
When I was shot down, our tail gunner was not with us that morning. He was ill. There was another young man there and that none of us knew. It was strange, we didn't know him, but he apparently had just joined the squadron or something. And so he was our tail gunner, and that was fine. So when we were shot down and he and I sent to camp, we became a partnership, he and I. That fella, I didn't smoke. He did smoke. But when we found that cigarettes were a great form of trading, he quit smoking. But he quit smoking, and I didn't encourage him at all because I didn't know the boy, and I didn't know if he could or not. But he did. And so we had more cigarettes when we finally got Red Cross parcels, and I got parcels from home. We had more cigarettes to trade. That fellow, he had a strange, I think, background. His dad was a minister, but his mother had died, and his dad had remarried. So he had half sisters and brothers younger than he. I don't think he had any full sisters or brothers. He seldom got letters, and he never got packages, and he never talked about his family, you know. I couldn't tell you how many brothers and sisters he had. I think he wasn't a happy family man at all. But we talked about him some, and I had his dad's address when we discharged. I wrote to him many times, to his dad's address. No letter ever came back. I never got an answer from anybody. So one time when I was here in the hospital being reevaluated, I talked to a psychiatrist and told him the story, and wondered why. Well, he couldn't tell me because he didn't know the people, you know, I was talking about. But he said probably that young man wasn't a happy man, but he probably just decided he wanted to forget that whole part of his life. And he got his address for me, even through the VA somehow. And he said, maybe you should write to him at that address. It was different than his dad's address, because this was many years later. But he was still living in Ohio. But I almost started to a couple times. Then I decided, well, you know, that might foul up the whole thing, because I didn't know his mental situation at all. So I never did do that. I'm kind of sorry. In fact, today I told that. While I'm sitting out here, some lady came over you write to, I can, when I was telling it was Harry, the guy's name was Harry. She says, you write to Harry. Maybe you can get him straightened out. Well, I don't know if he needed any straightening out, and I don't know if he's alive. I probably won't, but because I don't have his address anymore. But that's was a strange, strange thing.
Is there anything that you learned while you were from your experience in the war that you think somebody might learn from themselves?
Well, I sure learned to share. I don't think I've been any problem in my life. We shared. He and I shared everything. That's why it was so strange that, and we never had a bad word between us at all. That's why it was so strange that he just all of a sudden just quit. I even thought, well, I'd go back to Ohio sometime to visit my folks. I'll visit him, you know, but as it turned out, I didn't. Oh, I'm sure I did, but I'm thinking maybe it had happened anyway, you know. I don't think I changed a lot.